Coming up on the Radio Today podcast this week, we're in Derby for the BBC Local Radio Awards, the Gillards, plus James Cridland on what radio can learn from some on-demand television, and more classic audio from David Lloyd's Radio Moments archive.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, innovative solutions for creative radio people.
First, Radio Today's editor and founder Roy Martin is here to have our usual look through the other big stories of the week. Hello there, Roy.
It's a pleasure being here. Hi.
Hi. We're going to hear from some Gillards winners with Trevor in a minute, but you were there in Derby last week. How was it, the awards do?
I did, on my many travels. It was good. It was a good celebration of local radio by the BBC, of course. Not everybody got a nomination. I think everybody enters, as a rule, but probably only half of the 39 stations were represented. But it was a good night, and well done to the station of the year as well, which was BBC Radio.
Sheffield.
Indeed. So maybe we're off to Sheffield, because every year the winner hosts the event the year after. Although I'm told that there may be changes next year and that might not be happening, but we shall see. So it was a good night. Well done to everybody involved. Great. I've never been to Derby before. Can you believe that? It's my first time to Derby.
Are you planning on going again?
Not really, no. I was looking around for Ram FM, but I think it's left town long time ago.
Yeah, long since gone.
And David Lloyd hangs out in that part of the world, doesn't he, I think?
Yes. But so these awards normally in like November time, but so these were technically the 2018 awards, weren't they, in January?
Yeah, looking back at 2018, celebrating the best of local radio in the last 12 months.
I suppose it's nice to have something in January going on, because it's normally a bit of a quiet month. But not necessarily quiet for radio news, but quiet for radio events.
Yeah, I could have done without the day at the office, to be honest with you. But no, it was good. And a lot of good audio. I was one of the judges again this year, and we had to listen to loads and loads of entries for the particular category. Myself and a few others did. And the quality of local radio, you know, people talk about it and slag it off quite a lot, but when you condense it all and highlight it, there's a lot of good stuff going on in BBC local radio.
And things are changing. So after the Gillards, we've had this announcement from Chris Burns, the head of BBC local radio, that they're going to start targeting younger audiences. They say it's an exciting time, lots of opportunities for BBC local radio as commercial radio becomes increasingly networked, local newspapers in decline. So this is about rooting the stations in their local communities, but also targeting younger people.
Yeah, it appears that BBC local radio stations have had more changes of strategy than Bauer at the moment. So we're going younger again. But I think the big problem is no matter who they target, they're being told who to target from somebody in an office in London. It says, right, BBC local radio should be this, and every BBC local radio station is going to do this. So I think it's about time we said, OK, we've got a network of stations, but they're all individually locally operated stations. So let's put the people in charge of those stations. So Radio Manchester, only 30 miles away from Radio Lancashire geographically, but the output should be so much different because they're serving different communities.
Yeah, absolutely. And same goes for, you know, Devon versus Bristol or Cambridge versus Norfolk.
So let's hope some of the changes include that. They're all going a little bit younger. They're recruiting loads of fresh new talent for the evening shows, which will then, no doubt in time, get shows on the rest of the stations. So the breakfast show, the mid-morning show, they'll all have younger people and new talent on them within the next 5-10 years. So I think it's a long-term plan.
Okay, so talking about strategy, back to Bauer for our usual strategy meeting. some more things they've told us about this week, including swapping Kistry onto D1 and moving Absolute 90s onto D2. Scala, they've told us, is going to be on D2 and it's going to be in stereo, but regular flavour DAB. So it's going to be the only regular flavour DAB stereo service on D2. Are you keeping up at the back?
I'm not, actually. This is the kind of thing where you get the news in your email and you think, what? Is that a typo? is that right? And then we had to chase, or I had to chase, on my way back from Derby, Bauer to find out all the facts about this. So is it going to be stereo? Is it going to be DAB Plus? And they got the email saying it's going to be normal DAB. I was like, are you sure? Because there's not enough room. And then once you've done all that work, somebody else goes and copies you without crediting it. But we won't talk about that right now.
But Kistory is an interesting one because obviously it's got a massive audience, like 2.2 million or something, and that's on D2. So it's got potential to get even bigger being on D1 with the better coverage. And Absolute 90s, it's under a million, so probably won't really notice much on the reach by moving to D2. So for a change, we're going to say Bauer is making a sensible move here with Kistory swapping with Absolute 90s.
That's a sensible change, yeah. It's just the things that we don't know about that... Questions linger on.
So Scala on D2 with 83% of the UK covered rather than being on D1 where you get, 95-98% or something. So, yeah, if they want to go big, then perhaps D1 would have been a better home for Scala. But what do we know? We're not strategists.
And the other thing I think you pointed out or somebody did on Twitter that if they're making an effort to put a classical music station in stereo, why don't people make an effort to put normal stations in stereo?
Yeah, you know, they're spending millions of pounds making those new pop albums. They don't make them so we can listen in mono.
But that's the way the industry works. So we can't complain, can we?
No, absolutely not. You can complain if you hear something on the radio you don't like, and somebody did that about George Galloway talking about the Skripals last year and Russia and the UK government and the kind of relationship between that too. And there's a long ruling from Ofcom this week which has basically found talk radio in breach. And they're going to consider some sanctions against the station. You can read the full judgment on the Ofcom website. There's a link to that from radiotoday.co.uk. But seems you can't say whatever you like on the radio. Who knew?
That is quite a surprise, actually, because I thought you could. But clearly you can't. I usually do, but then nobody listens to me, no, so it's okay.
Definitely not. They're not even listening now. We must do our kind of get well soons of the week. Johnny Walker is having 6 weeks off Radio 2 to have his heart upgrade. It's nothing to do with the global station. And Nicky Campbell missing shows this week with kidney stones, admitted to Salford Hospital. So get well soon to Nicky and to Johnny, both Radio 1 legends, of course.
And anybody else who's ill.
Anybody else who knows them, yes. Next week we're on to Rajar, first Rajar release of 2019, looking at the quarter fours for 2018. So it's not really going to tell us anything because it's other than it's the last set of figures for Chris Evans on Radio 2, I guess.
I guess it is, yeah, but nothing else really happened in the last 3 months of last year, so... Yeah, the next one will be an interesting one.
It will start getting interesting. Right, well, thank you, Roy. We're heading to Derby next, and we'll talk to you next time.
Speak to you in a couple of weeks.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
It is the Radio Today programme. Well, it's only January, but already we've had the first Radio Awards due of 2019. Last week in Derby, BBC local radio people gathered for the annual Gillard Awards, named after local radio's founder Frank Gillard. And Trevor Dan was there for Radio Today.
Thank you, Stu. Coming up, a glimpse behind the scenes at what made Radio Sheffield Station of the Year and why Toby Foster and the Naked Podcasters also won individual awards. But first, this year's Gillards didn't have quite the impact of the previous event when BBC Director General Tony Hall made his announcement about giving stations back their evenings. But what was immediately noticeable in the room was the diversity of the diners. These new evening slots have been filled in many cases by young BAME talent, helping local radio better reflect its communities. But one of the most telling remarks from the stage came from one of the self-confessed white middle-class winners. A double winner, in fact. Pete Simpson from BBC Radio Bristol.
I think the point I was making was that we celebrate diversity, or meant to celebrate diversity in the BBC, and especially local radio. We celebrate the communities that we serve. And in Bristol, 30% of young people come from black and Asian minority backgrounds, yet our newsroom and our radio station is, you know, embarrassingly dominated by people like me, who are white and middle class. Now, I'm not saying I don't think I'm any good at what I do, but what I'm saying is that if we continue to ignore that fact, when we expect this 30% of the young people of Bristol to listen or watch the BBC, they won't bother because we don't represent or reflect them in any way. So it's all very well doing a series, a documentary like we did about the St. Paul's Carnival, but if no one from St Paul's works for Radio Bristol, in the end, is completely futile.
I remember going to a conference once where a woman from CBC in Toronto said that she changed the sound of that station by taking everybody who worked there to the window and saying, look out there at the street, do they look like us?
Yeah.
And of course the answer was, well, no, they don't, because they're a very, you know, diverse community, Toronto.
Yeah.
And Bristol's the same. So one day you'll be running this stuff, because that's what happens to young people who are lippy like you. How are you going to change that?
Well, everyone said, well, that's my question at the moment, because I'm not in charge of it. I mean, what I would say is that actually, you know, we've had the, you know, the new head of radio in England.
Chris Burns.
We've had Helen Thomas come and speak to staff in Bristol, and we asked this question, and they said, oh, it's a problem of recruitment. We can't recruit because of the unions, this, that and the other. But my response to that would be, you know, creativity is the lifeblood of our organisation. If we can come up with new ways to make local radio relevant, we can come up with ways to make our newsrooms relevant. To me, it seems very simple, and I might be naive because I don't employ people and I don't recruit people. But if you take people, yes, they have to have talent, they have to want to do what we want to do, they have to have stories to tell. You can't tell me that those people aren't out there, because they are. So we employ those people in future.
I think you've talked yourself into your next job. Thank you for being so candid. Really appreciate it. And congratulations on your two awards.
Thanks for asking those questions. And it's not just, you know, I do think these things are important. I genuinely do, because I love local radio and I love what we do. And I think we need to be able to thrive in the future.
Good man.
Thank you, mate.
BBC Radio Bristol's Pete Simpson. Chris Burns, who's recently taken over as head of English radio and who Pete mentioned there, didn't want to speak to me at the event, but she's promised to come on the Radio Today podcast in the next few weeks, and I'm sure we'll tackle her on that subject. Meanwhile, the big Gillard winners on the night were Radio Sheffield, with two programme awards, including Best Presenter for the Naked Podcast duo, Jenny Eales and Kat Harborne, and Best Breakfast Show for Toby Foster and his team. We'll meet them, and later, John Culshaw, who was the presenter of the evening.
Katrina Bunker, editor.
Best editor of radio.
I think, actually, Toby Foster, what you said was the greatest fucking editor in BBC Local Radio.
I did. Yeah. I turned up at BBC Local Radio when I was 33 years old, and Katrina was about one. And she was making the tea and doing something on sport at the weekends. And we all knew how good she was, and we all knew how bossy she was. And she's gone away. She left us for 5 years to go to Radio Leeds.
Exiled.
But she's been an absolute perfect example of how BBC Local Radio can work, because she's come back in, and I've won, I don't know how many Best Breakfast Show was his names. She's the most supportive, the most positive editor I've ever worked with. And through not only professional issues that I've had, through personal issues that I've had, Katrina has been there all the way. And she's an absolute shining example to the weeknight people that we've got coming through of how the BBC in local radio can make people advance.
Toby,
I couldn't be more proud.
That's enough of you.
Yes, I know.
Let's hear from the powers that really be. Well done, Toby, by the way, for your award. Katrina, what is it about Radio Sheffield, do you think? It's always hard to analyse when you're the boss, but why do you think you won?
I would say definitely over the last year, 18 months or so, we have taken lots of risks, and I'm really proud of that. So we've not only been ambitious and creative with some of the things that we've done, we've tried new things, and I think that can be perceived to be something that local radio doesn't do a lot.
Well, I was going to say this to you, as a veteran of local radio myself, risk taking hasn't always been the strategy, has it? It's often been, you know, do what you're told.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that something's changed over the past couple of years?
I would say it's certainly changed in Sheffield, and I think it is changing across the network. And that's a really good thing, because, you know, you're not going to change by standing still. It sounds like a really obvious thing to say, But audiences are changing. We know that. Audience habits are changing. If we just stay the same and play it safe all the time, of course we're going to lose audience. So to kind of win new audiences and get new communities involved with local radio, which, let's face it, has been here for 50 years and in some cases hasn't changed an awful lot, we're going to have to do new things and raise a few eyebrows and kind of get people involved with some ambitious things. And we've done that in spades over the last year.
How important for a radio station like you now is the digital space, the podcasting, the online on demand, alongside the linear radio that, as you say, you've been doing for half a century?
At the end of the day, we're storytellers, and I think if it's a great story, it can work on any platform. Things like social media and working on demand content and podcasts and things are really important. But at the end of the day, the story and the content is what matters. And if you get that right, you can do it on whatever platform. And I think it's really important that local radio stations are in the digital space. You know, what radio station in 2019 wouldn't be on social media? It's bonkers, because everyone's on social media, especially younger people. So if you're going to win in younger audiences, of course you've got to be there. But you be there with the great stories that you tell, and you do them well on everything, and make sure that if you're doing a big kind of project or you're making a film like Common People, you're making it really well for digital as well as for the radio. So it's just an extra way of getting our stories and our content out for me.
Congratulations, Station of the Year. That must make you feel great.
It was always an ambition. When I became an editor, I was like, I want to win Station of the Year, because, you know, you've got to have ambition, haven't you? I'm so proud of this. I'm really proud of it for the team who've worked really hard and have tried new things and been brave enough to, you know, do some bonkers things over the last year or so. But I would say it's the icing on the cake of what we do every day and what we do every day in terms of the programmes that we make and the connection we have with the audiences is the really important thing.
Jenny and Kat, it's odd to see you with your clothes on. Tell us the story of how the Naked Podcast for Radio Sheffield actually started.
Well, Kat came to me and said, I've got this idea for a podcast. We had been friends for many, many years. So we met BBC Radio York back in 2012, was it? Yeah. And we wanted to basically emulate the kind of chats and bants we had like down the pub in a kind of podcast. And we were looking at ways how we could work this out. So Kat had... We bounced a few ideas around, and then Kat came to me one day and she goes, I've got this thought. What do you think about doing a podcast? And talking about like body image, women, just everything about our bodies, but we do it naked. And I was like, I'm sold. I love it. I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was bonkers, but I thought so ambitious. And I thought it would push me out of my comfort zone. I think it would push us out of our comfort zone. So I was like, yeah, do it.
And we started recording on our own,
yeah,
without ever considering that the BBC would ever back us. And it was when we went to our boss, Katrina Bunker at BBC Radio Sheffield, and said, look, are we going to lose our jobs when we publish this podcast? And she went, I'll check, but actually, why don't you publish it within the BBC? And we said, well, it's rude and it's got swearing, and we're talking very openly and very honestly about our bodies and everything to do with them. And she said, yeah, that's fine. And from that, series one was born, and we did 26 episodes, and we spoke to 23 amazing women, each of whom bared all with us in a private space and talked very openly, very honestly about their bodies and about the things that had troubled them, the things that they wanted to celebrate, and above all, the things that other people needed to know in order to love their own bodies. And I think that's what was born from the Naked Podcast. And we're so proud of everything we have done, everything the women who've taken part has done, but also the reaction that people have had to it, and the fact that people listening have said, do you know what, I've realised I used to think of myself in a certain way, but actually it was only me making myself think that. And we've all got the ability to change how we think about something, and if we can help change women and men's minds about how they feel about their bodies, then that would be amazing. But also, it's a proper laugh as well, and we're great mates.
Yeah, and also a lot of the question sometimes comes up, well, why naked? Actually, you notice when you do get naked, yes, of course there's the tittering and there's the screaming at first, and it's embarrassing for the first sort of 5 minutes, but then after that you kind of forget you've got no clothes on anyway, and the conversations are more, and I know I use the word revealing, but they are, and people are a lot more open, and it creates an intimacy that I think you don't kind of get when you've got your kit on.
Isn't there a bigger thing here as well, which is it's a podcast idea. I know it's broadcast, but it's the kind of idea that wouldn't have happened, I don't think, if all we did was linear radio.
Oh yeah, 100%. There's no way. We only ever conceived it as a podcast. It was never going to be a programme on radio because that's not how we speak on the radio. We, you know, we use certain phrases, certain language. We're both BBC reporters.
But the risk of interrupting, the learning from that for me is, why? Why don't we on linear radio talk more intimately like we do on podcasts?
It's a good question, and it's one that since we've done the podcast, I've definitely found myself speaking more freely, more openly on radio. And I think actually the conversation is a two-way thing, and people do respond if you speak very openly and naturally and admit your flaws, admit the things that...
Also, through conversations, we often find our podcast lasts around an hour. Sometimes the most pivotal point of the podcast comes around, say, 30, 40 minutes in after the conversations have been going for a while, and it's just allowed to flow. The conversation's just allowed to flow. You're not worried about heading to travel or do we have to fit a disc in or what time are we going to the news? You know what I mean? And that restriction is not there, so you're just allowed to explore your conversations, aren't you, and allow them to go wherever they lead.
Take that coming up. Here's travel.
Exactly, there's none of that. Tits, bits and pits, that's all we've got.
Kat, Jenny, thank you and congratulations. Fantastic.
A pleasure, thank you. Thank you.
Tonight's maitre d' was the great John Coleshaw. Can I say that?
Well, I'm very, very happy that you did. How kind of you.
This is your third Gillard's.
Yes,
Glutton
yes.
For Punishment. But it's it is a lovely event, isn't it?
It's a fantastic event. You get the real sense of the camaraderie of all the different stations, that team spirit, people all working on their programmes together. And the clips are astonishing. Absolutely astonishing. The lovely clip of the late cricket commentator Dave Callahan
was that was marvellous.
That was what a standout
and
moment that
the
was.
The lady living in her car who rang up yes. the phone in was marvellous.
Her optimism, despite those circumstances, was just incredible. And the story about how the BA on the station on shift that morning just happened to take that call and please come on the air. All those stories we heard about how programmes are put together in these moments that happen. Like that, very special, wonderful.
You spend most of your time obviously working on the national picture, but my sense of you is that, a bit like me, you kind of miss the local environment and digging down into the community.
Yes, that lovely team spirit that you get and meeting real characters. I was chatting with Martine Croxall from the News Channel. She was one of the judges. She was recounting the days when she used to work on local stations, and you know, where you've no budget, you've got to own your story, you've got to put it together from beginning to finish, and the pride that you feel in that. Everybody has such a warm feeling about the team spirit you get.
Don't you think also that because there's not a lot of budget and therefore not a lot of people in control of you as a storyteller, if you believe in the story, you just get on with it and you just tell it and nobody gets in the way.
Yes, exactly. I mean, what a luxury that is. What a luxury.
That doesn't happen at Radio 4, I'm guessing.
No. And the way the journalists and broadcasters will spend every hour that's necessary on that story to make it work, even if they're up for 72 hours without any sleep, whatever it takes to get that done and to get that story out there, that sense of pride and ownership of it is just wonderful to witness. Very inspiring.
If I may ask you one other thing, John, while I've got you. The commercial radio sector is making the news at the moment. Simon Mayo's Scala and Chris's Virgin and all the rest of it. You work in an area of broadcasting, viz. Comedy, that is pretty much what the BBC does and nobody else does. Yeah. Are you looking forward to the fact that there might be a richer, deeper market for the kind of thing you do?
Yes, I mean, it's changing so much, isn't it? Podcasts and the like, it's so mercurial now that it is spreading sort of everywhere. There's so many more chances, so much more areas to put your imagination into. Alongside all of that, alongside of this great flock of starlings flying in formation, we've all seen those videos on Countryfile. It's a little bit like that. To sort of have those, you know, marble pillars of national programmes on Radio 4 alongside that.
I feel I should be paying for this, by the way, but I'm not.
I'm being much more poetic.
Very good.
I'm more poetic than I intended to be. I'm sorry. Yeah, they make very good neighbours.
Yeah.
The way the industry and the whole craft is flickering, changing, evolving in a way that seems to be accelerating.
Maybe 20 years ago, Radio 4 comedy was the only place for you. I'm guessing if you're that age now, you might be looking at a broader palette that you can paint from because of podcasts and Audible and
exactly.
You know, all the online platforms.
You can just have your own channel if you want to. 20 years ago, as you say, you wouldn't really hear us saying, oh yes, it's a bit of a Radio 4 comedy, because there was only one place where you found that is still strongly there, but it has many good neighbours, many other things existing within it. And you know, the more platforms, the more radio, the better. The good stuff will always rise to the top.
So people, my podcast idea, which is about football and deceased people who played on the wing, it's called Dead Wingers. Is that going to play at all?
I think we need to write that down. Let's start making the production notes now. Oh, this John summer, I want that on.
John Culshaw, thank you so much.
Thank you, Trevor. All the best.
John Culshaw there, ending Trevor Down's report from the Gillard Awards in Derby. James Cridland and David Lloyd still to come. First, a word about Clean Feed. If you haven't tried it yet, make this week the week you give it a go. If you're doing OBs, interviews, co-hosting from a remote location, Clean Feed is ideal. It's been designed for radio people and for podcasters, and it's really simple to connect live audio over the web in great quality. And you can even record it all within your browser. It won't cost you anything to get started. Clean Feed will just take you 30 seconds to sign up, and within minutes, you'll be doing your first live interview or recording for your podcast. You can find out more at cleanfeed.net. That's cleanfeed.net.
I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist.
Now for viewers in London and the South East.
Television, as we know, is changing rapidly, significantly more so than radio. Viewers to live TV are declining as audiences get more used to on-demand services like Netflix, Hulu, Stan, or iPlayer. So TV platforms are trying new things.
We now present from Studio A, Alexandra Palace, another programme in our series of experimental transmissions in colour.
At the beginning of this year, the TV system that I subscribe to, a little Australian set-top box called Fetch TV, added a new channel. It's a true crime channel called Oxygen, run by NBC Universal. Oxygen is an interesting model because it isn't actually a television channel at all. Sure, it looks like a television channel. It appears in the EPG alongside all the other television channels, and it has a broadcast schedule too, 24 hours a day. If I flick through the channels in an evening, I'll flick past Oxygen, just like any other channel. You can watch it just like any other channel too. You can watch a show, and then the show finishes, and then something else will start. In fact, Oxygen is just a collection of on-demand TV shows. On the TV guide, it exists as a virtual channel, the EPG slot there to promote the shows available on demand. So when you channel surf into Oxygen, it isn't giving you a live TV channel at all. In fact, the show conveniently starts at the beginning. It's an on-demand service. Programming has been chosen based on how well it'll perform as an on-demand product. So what could radio learn from this? Imagine you tune into the radio and the first thing you hear is your favourite song, followed by, yes, the live presenters, at least recorded live 5 minutes ago, a radio station that gives you the travel at 8:20, and only at 8:20 because that's the time you're just getting ready to drive into work. A radio station that has everything that makes great radio, presenters talking about the football last night, the ride into town today, but a radio station that has nothing that makes for bad radio. No poorly targeted advertising, no overplaying of my favourite songs. If we were to think of great music radio as a jigsaw made from short pieces of on-demand audio content rather than a live, unalterable stream, well, what would that mean? That jigsaw could be assembled just for me on my mobile phone and for you on yours, and a version of that jigsaw also assembled for those listening on FM, with less of the personalization, but otherwise sounding virtually identical. Is the future for radio something which is devised as a collection of on-demand audio assembled for each listener, where the FM transmitter is just another listener? does radio need a bit of oxygen?
Well, good evening. And as I said a few minutes ago, only I understand nobody could hear me. Welcome to BBC Two.
You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening. Now, on the Radio Today programme, here's David Lloyd. Radio
Moments. It was in 1972 that the control of broadcasting hours by the Postmaster General ended. Can you believe the post office used to tell you whether you could be on air or not? 40 years ago this week saw the first BBC station go 24 hours.
It has to be understood that our two most popular services are Radio 1 and Radio 2. And for a long time now, in the evenings, they've been merging together. What I'm announcing today is the total separation of Radio 1 and 2, and indeed turning Radio 1 into a network in its own right with its own controller, who will be Derek Chinnery. Radio 2 will become the first 24-hour network in Britain, although there are some local stations that broadcast 24 hours, and, of course, it will be giving music and news through the night.
Something of an historic night for BBC Radio, for the close down in just a few moments' time will be the last on Radio 2. When the network opens up again at 5 o'clock, it's not due to close down again. And 24-hour broadcasting means that Radio News will for the first time be able to offer full round-the-clock coverage. And everyone in the newsroom is hoping that this new fuller service will provide something more than gloom. And so say all of us. I think we all feel that. Well, let's have a look at the clock before I do my final and last close down of the year. What is it? Coming up to nearly 3 minutes past two. Nearly 3 minutes past two. Tom Edwards will be propelled by a BBC alarm clock to wake you at 5 o'clock with his early show. So if you are working through the night, only 3 hours to go, and then we'll be back with some more company, some more records.
Had a tweet in the week, actually, from Andy Finney, who said that in the 70s, David Carter, who was then at BBC Radio London, wanted to broadcast overnight. So they interviewed the Postmaster General, who was then Chris Chataway, and during the interview asked if they could go live overnight. Chataway said yes, so they did. In later years, it was people like Janice Long who sat there at Radio 2 in the middle of the night until this week, 2 years ago.
Fatboy Slim and Praise You. So I just wanted to thank Mark. I want to thank all of my friends, Chris, obviously Paul and my family. Thank you very, very much indeed. I want to thank all of the bands who, when I've approached them, said, would you like to come in and play live? They've been well up for it. And I want to thank you because I've made some great friendships with you all. It's been fantastic. I know so many people all over the UK and all over the world who have been very kind to me, and I really appreciate all your support and all of your emails. And I thank you for your time, and I thank you for letting me into your lives. And this is my final tune, Echo and the Bunnymen, and Nothing Ever Lasts Forever.
Janice Long. Some of the newer stations are clocking up the decades on air. Happy 20th anniversary this week to this one.
Mansfield 103.2, George and Aretha Franklin. I knew you were waiting for me. I'm John Rockley, and so, come on, let me tell you a bit about what you'll be hearing on Mansfield 103.2, your new local radio station. Now, one of the most important things that we'll be doing here on Mansfield 103.2 is playing your favourite music. The likes of the Lighthouse Family, Elton John, Madonna, Simply Red, plus the best of the charts, all mixed with the best of the 60s and 70s and 80s. Basically, everything you want to hear. So every time you turn us on, we guarantee that you'll hear your favourite songs. And how do we know that? Because we've asked you.
Mansfield 103.2, launching this week in 1999. Launches are bad enough without doing an OB at the same time, aren't they? Goodness. Now, is it really 3 years since we lost Terry?
That'll be Three Tops and Mississippi Valley. And I must tell you that in the post this morning came a most acceptable gift to me. It's an item of ladies' apparel. Of the double gusset variety. The ones that were made to last. The pre-war variety, it feels like. I'm not that old. For all the girls in a hosiery factory, wouldn't you know, in Preston, and for all the lads of the New Brit and White Bull, Walton LaBelle, and also the JC combo in Sheffield, and down one leg is give our love to Jason D and Pete Simons, and some kisses on the elastic, and the rest of this message is lost in elastic. It's from Christine, Wendy, and Brenda. Very heartening to get something like this in the post. Brings back all those wonderful memories. Butterscotch, that one, and don't you know she said hello. It's coming up to 3:30 news time, BBC Radios 1 and 2. Time to join Robin Boyle in the newsroom.
Today's cabinet meeting.
Terry Wogan in 1971. We lost him this week in 2016. Some programmes on radio last just a matter of months, others last 70 years.
This is Radio 4, and now Book of the Week. We Are Displaced by Malala Yousafzai. First-hand accounts of refugee
Book of the Week, or Book at Bedtime, as it used to be called, and still is online, proving that alliterative radio titles usually do endure. Back in 1949, when the late-night serials started, it was a bit of an experiment, and the first readings came from a book called The Three Hostages by John Buchan, read by Arthur Bush. Well, now we know a little bit more about the path ahead in 2019 for BBC Local Radio. Now, Chris Burns has been chatting. It's certainly a lot different from how it was in its early days. This week in 1968, my local BBC station, Radio Nottingham, came on air with a rather interesting news operation.
In the early days of local radio, everybody was expected to be a jack of all trades and a master of all trades as well. And I think it first occurred to me that we needed to concentrate on a newsroom proper when I was being a disc jockey in the studio and there's a few hot stories breaking and I had to put on an LP and say to the station assistant, well, I'll have to just leave this for a few moments because we've got some fairly hot news coming in. I'll be back as soon as I can, but I'll just go and write up a few stories in the newsroom and see how it's happening. And it was a fairly ludicrous and inadequate way of doing things, but sure enough, you'd leave the studio and leave the record running, and you'd write your news stories, make a couple of telephone calls, and you'd think, wow, you know, the record must be almost out. And then you'd run back to the studio breathless and say, well, I hope you enjoyed that piece of music. Now we've got some more music for you. Hope you're enjoying yourselves or whatever. You put on another track and you think, wow, you know, this fire must be still burning pretty brightly. So you'd go and make some more inquiries then.
Radio Nottingham newsman Tony Cook reflecting in the 70s of how his newsroom used to be in the 60s, such as it was. So with City Talk 105.9 launching from Liverpool 11 years ago.
The UK's newest and most exciting radio station broadcasting live from 450 feet above the skyline of one of the country's most exciting cities.
Desert Island Discs beginning on the Forces programme 77 years ago.
On our desert island this week is the first gentleman of the gramophone, the man to whom everyone who presents a programme of gramophone records and every listener who enjoys such programmes owes a great deal.
The launch of Radio Blackburn 48 years ago.
The time is 12 o'clock, and to introduce this first official broadcast, here's your station manager, John Musgrave.
The famous Man in Black series starting 70 years ago.
This is your narrator, the Man in Black.
Bob Shannon taking over from Leslie Douglas as controller of Radio 2 10 years ago.
BBC Radio 2.
And Tony Blackburn's 76th birthday.
Thank you very much for listening. It really has been lovely doing the first programme on the BBC. Actually, it's great being here. I usually do auditions, but
those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David, and also James, Roy, Trevor, and guests and winners at the Gillards this week. And Mr. Dan is back next week with our Radio Today roundtable discussion for February. Join us for that.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.